time is 8:31. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 High FM. Howard Sexton in a studio with me. And joining us on the line, Jamie Mighty. A very good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Excellent. Great. Thank you. So we, Zanati and I, started chatting yesterday about the announcement that there's going to be a, or there is the funding, and a private funding, I believe, for an Afrikaans medium university. And we suddenly started seeing that there was a tremendous amount of discussion around it. Inherently, neither Zanati and I felt that this was a problem. Why should it be if somebody wants to have a university in a medium, especially one that is private, in a medium of their choice, whether it's a Greek university, or whatever it would be here in South Africa. But we wanted to get your view on it. You're fairly vocal in many areas of the social political conversation. What's the feedback that you've seen, and what's your thoughts on it?
So I think the concern is that it's a bit exclusionary. That's the real concern that a lot of people have. In the same way as if we built a Jewish university in South Africa, many people would find that a Hebrew university would obviously cater to King David Linkfield, Yeshiva, and other, Herzliya kids, to the exclusion of everybody else. And it would be well-resourced, and those kids would have an unfair advantage in the eyes of many because they were learning in a medium that excludes many. Now, whilst Afrikaans is a national language, it has a disproportionate amount of status, considering that it's not a global language in the way that English is. So many South Africans are excluded from accessing an Afrikaans university. So at face value, it does look like those kind of universities will have the outcome of excluding many people. So that's where the concern comes from. But in principle, should you be in principle allowed to make a university that caters to your cultural enclave, to your cultural group? Should you have a Zulu university? Should you have a Tsonga university? Yes, absolutely, you can do those things. The concern then just becomes around access. And obviously, some language groups are bigger than others. But realistically speaking, I do think that what South Africa needs is more quality within all of the institutions. And I just think we have to make a concession that English has to be the medium of tertiary learning, because it is the one that is most equally accessible to all when you consider the challenges of having 11 official languages.
Don't you think, though, that we are really only having this discussion because of the proverbial elephant in the room, which is the fact that Afrikaans medium, forced Afrikaans medium education was a major issue during the apartheid era, and somehow this is triggering us as a country and taking us back to that. Isn't that really what we're talking about, and not the fact that it is possibly exclusionary?
Well, I think it's all of those things, right? So you're definitely correct. There was a whole protest around being forced to learn Afrikaans in high schools. We saw that in 76. Mm. That was a central issue to it. And the Afrikaner Nationalist Party during apartheid did want to impose a more widespread usage of Afrikaans as a way of creating subversion. So some people are necessarily and obviously triggered by the imposition, as they find it, of another Afrikaans medium of learning in a country where there are rich enclaves in South Africa which are Afrikaner in nature, which would give this particular university a head start over, for instance, the University of Limpopo, or even, Vaal University of Technology. So, of course, that is part of this discussion as well. It is triggering. It has the consequence of being exclusionary, and subsequently also that the language that we are choosing as a medium for learning, I think realistically has to be English because of the history that we're coming from.
JB, I must say, I cannot disagree with you more. I think the question is something else.
What do you think the question is?
I think the real question is, is this excluding, going to exclude people based on race by disguising it as language or not? I think that's the real question. Because
I mean,
think
you're definitely going to do that. I mean, it's part of it.
Not
right?
necessarily. Because, you know, language is a very, very common, particularly Afrikaans, is a very commonly spoken language in South Africa. Look at the colored community in the Western Cape. Look at many rural black communities where often, Afrikaans is in fact a second language before another vernacular language rather than English. Mm-hmm. So the question really is this really an attempt to allow people to learn in a language that they're comfortable in, where English isn't necessarily their first tongue, or is this really an attempt to exclude people based on race from the university?
And I think that's what the concern is.
And
I think that's where it is.
That's the real question. Mm.
So let me respond to the academic nature of language. So for many people, they can speak Afrikaans, right? They can speak it, they can hold a conversation, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they can engage with text or that they can write well in text. So you'll find that they are not necessarily meeting the academic criteria for going to an Afrikaans medium university. So even though there are communities, although they're not as widespread as some people believe, where there is mastery of spoken Afrikaans, you'll find that that doesn't always come with a mastery of academic Afrikaans. There is a big gap, and you can look at the pass rates. When you look at the Afrikaans pass rates, how many people are writing it as a subject and how they are performing. And then if you break it down into the schools, the rural schools, the black community schools, you'll find that most of the students are not getting over 60% in that particular subject. So what it means is that the people who stand to benefit most from an Afrikaans medium university are the ones who have academic mastery of Afrikaans, who mostly predominantly will be white Afrikaners. So the question of triggering, the question of access, all of these, it's not one or the other. These things are happening simultaneously. And while AfriForum has a strong case for the fact that they do need to have a medium of instruction which is theirs alone, we can't just consider that strong case without looking at the strong case that arises from the people who are objecting to this, not only for the triggering, not only for the racial exclusion, but also for the equality conversation around mediums of learning and what is the best thing for South Africa to do. And we can't ignore the fact that there are rich billionaires in South Africa who will be able to fund this university in a way that the University of Limpopo won't be able to get funding for. And these are all part of the conversation. It's not one or the other.
Right. I would love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Jamie, I know that that we didn't actually say we wanted to talk about this, but I just I see that you've been very vocal around it, and I'd love your thoughts on it. You've pushed back very, very hard around some of South African political leaders' approach to the passing of Robert Mugabe, and as somebody who is from Zimbabwe, who is deeply knowledgeable, unfortunately, in some of the tragedies of what has gone on there. You've resisted very, very sharply the way in which Mugabe has been portrayed as a hero and not in the way in which the latter part of his life, he conducted himself in the latter part of his life. Why do you think that South Africans, in particular our foreign department, seems to get this wrong over and over again? We came out in support of Venezuela. 4 million people have fled that country. The average Cuban is starving, and Howard Saxton has been there. He can tell us that directly as to what he witnessed when he was there. So often we find ourselves as a South African government standing on the wrong side of the international community. And I think that we did it once again. I've long held the view that South Africa, the South African government, has blood on their hands with regard to Zimbabwe. We could have addressed this issue already in Thabo Mbeki's times. He ignored it. He spoke about the soft diplomacy. He could have done a tremendous amount of good. And we perpetuated that same cycle of tolerating a terrible situation situation that really did kill many, many people. What do you think it is that causes the South African system to continually perpetuate this?
So I think that it's three things. Number one, it's that the South African government, the ANC, historically received support from these kinds of organizations. So focusing on Mugabe specifically, they received support from him, and they view him primarily from the focal lens of the liberation story of South Africa. Number two is the coinciding of values. So because they agree on the Pan-African issues, and because a lot of these organizations stem from the ANC actually. So in Zimbabwe, the liberation story begins with Joshua Nkomo, who started the Southern Rhodesian ANC, which then split into ZAPU and ZANU. So the ANC has this rich history with all of these organizations. So that's where that support also comes from. But thirdly, I would say that because they only had, you know, momentary interactions with Mugabe, they never lived under his regime. So they never got to witness the black on black violence that Mugabe perpetrated. Their only perspective of him was from his confrontations with the West, which they may have agreed with in principle. But Mugabe, from the very onset of his regime, started brutalizing his people. In 1983, he launched the Gugurahundi campaign, which was a massacre of the Matebele because he viewed them as a political threat. Over 20,000 people were killed, countless rapes, many people were injured. That trauma still lives on in Zimbabwe. Then he launched another campaign in the early 2000s, Operation Mrambatswina, where shacks were destroyed, where informal traders were kicked out of Harare because Mugabe said that they were dirty. Then there was the rigging of elections in 2002, the rigging of elections in 2008, the suppression of the media, the suppression of political rights, and then the very, very messy seizure of land by the war veterans under the support of Mugabe, where many more people were brutalized, where people lost lives and property. All of those things were the modus operandi of Robert Mugabe. But because the ANC and the EFF, who are speaking most vocally about this in South Africa, they never lived under Mugabe, and their only interactions with Mugabe are as the Pan-African vocalist who is criticizing the West, as well as the person who supported the South African liberation movements. That's why I think they speak to him or speak about him in this way. I do think that it's a very toxic narrative, because it trivializes the lived experiences of many Zimbabweans. It trivializes the victims who lost their lives and people who lost their homes, people who lost their livelihoods as a result of the Mugabe regime. It trivializes and minimizes all of that. And I think that is an insult to millions of Zimbabweans who are actually trying to tell their story, that while he lived, they were oppressed by Mugabe. And while he dies, they are oppressed by the suppression of their voices by this big, powerful political name such as Thabo Mbeki, such as Julius Malema, and even some other Pan-African giants or rather continental leaders right now like Uhuru Kenyatta and John Magufuli, who've all come to try to almost, window dress what the actual legacy of Mugabe is. And I do think that you're absolutely right when you say that South Africa is complicit in supporting the Mugabe regime, because Thabo Mbeki had opportunities where he could have put diplomatic pressure on Mugabe for reforms, and he chose not to do that, 2002 being one example, 2008 being another example. In 2002, the Kampepe report, which he had commissioned, his judges went into Zimbabwe and said that was not a free and fair election. In 2008, Mugabe lost the first round of elections. Tsvangirai had 48, Mugabe had 43% of the vote, and that was with rigging, right? And then still, they allowed Mugabe to unleash violence to such an extent that Tsvangirai had to pull out of the election. And that's how Mugabe regained power in 2008. And Thabo Mbeki was there, sitting on the sidelines. And then they coerced Tsvangirai into a power-sharing deal, which he ultimately could not hold up to, and he walked away in a year. So we definitely know that South Africa could have done better. I think that the history will show as being a correct conclusion.
Mighty Jamie, thank you as always. Interesting SMS on the first subject. This is from Ian S. He's a listener in the Netherlands. He writes, "Hi Howard, here in the Netherlands, universities are switching to English as the language to teach in. The reason is that most textbooks are written in English nowadays in any event, supporting the theory that that English is the becomes the medium of instructions." It is 8:46. Jamie Mighty, thank you as always for your thoughts on this subject.